best part of the whole event. It's a company that I have, a product that I haven't really used, all right? I won't admit I've used, and I know everybody here uses it, but won't admit they use it. I'd like to introduce Marcus Friend, I hope I pronounced that right, with Plenty of Fish, one of the fastest or the biggest dating site, largest dating site in the world, bootstrapped the company from zero to 100 million in revenue with zero outside funding and sub 60 people maybe. Give it up for Marcus. And our lovely moderator, Kim Gittleson with BBC. Give it up for Kim.
It was a time that you were desperately looking for work. So talk to me a little bit about what you did, the idea behind Plenty of Fish.
So I was looking for a way to improve my resume so that I could get a job as a developer again. So what I did is I thought, you know, I hate reading books, or for development, I'd rather go do something. So what I did is I went and, you know, what was the hardest thing I could possibly build? And well, I figured a dating site would be really hard. Back at that time, there weren't any websites that were really dynamic. So I went and spent 2 weeks, built the site, and I had it on my personal computer, and somehow Google started indexing it. And so after about 2 weeks, people started signing up, and then I'm like, wow, there's people signing up here. And you know, maybe I should take this seriously. So then I went and started adding new features, and then more and more people started signing up. And you know, by the time, I think it was about end of June, I had 4,000 or 5,000 people signed up, and then Google AdSense came up. And, you know, I threw it up, and then the first month made $1,000, and then I figured, you know, maybe I should start taking this a little more seriously, and, you know, just kind of blew it from there.
So you were making $1,000 a month, Google had ranked you. How did you grow the site from there? What were some of the things that you tried out? I know that you were constantly trying new features, so let's talk a little bit about those.
So very early on, it was mostly just about getting users, and there was still the Google dance that happened, you know, where they update their index once a month. So it was all about trying to get SEO and to rank for a dating term. So trying to rank for online dating. So it was, you know, changing the homepage to have dating keywords all over it. And one of the things I did that was very important early on was I built a state-city index. So off the homepage, you link to the states, and then you link to the cities. So it's like, you know, if someone searches for Vancouver dating, it'd show up Toronto dating, whatever. But now that's been copied by everyone, and everyone uses that. But that was really instrumental in the first 6 months or so of the company.
And then talk to me a little bit about how you achieved virality. You talked about how it was a formula back in the day that you could sort of input certain factors and it would take off in the US and Canada and Australia. What were some of those metrics?
Yeah. So because dating is a marketplace business, you need, if someone signs up and there's no one there, no one is going to use it. So it was all about, you know, just trying to get tons of people to sign up. So what happens is people would sign up and then they'd be in the database and they'd show up and search it. So as more people would sign up in a given market or area, they'd have more people and there was a probability that they would send someone a message. So if there was enough population density within a geographical area, the area would explode. So really the key early on was just to get, in Canada, we just ranked across Google, so we got a lot of, you know, 100 people or so coming in per day or 200 signups a day, and that was enough to make Canada go viral. And then the United States was a bit harder, but after a few years of growth and making money, just dumping some money into AdWords and topping that up so that each of these markets would achieve virality.
Now, why did you decide not to accept any outside funding? Presumably investors were coming to you once they saw how successful the model was after a year, 2 years, or 3 years. Why did you decide that that wasn't for you?
Because by the time they showed up, I had millions in the bank account. You know, there was no need, and you could spend a ton of money on marketing and get absolutely nowhere. So there was no way to spend that money. Right. By the time I hired my first employee, I already had 15 million users and 10 million in revenues.
So let's go back to that. You ran the company by... So for 5 years, it was just you.
Just me.
You got to 15 million users, 10 million in revenue. What was the straw that broke the camel's back? Why did you decide you finally needed to hire someone?
It was when I was custom building image servers, and they were, because I was serving 2 billion pages a day off a single web, or a month off a single web server, and serving hundreds of millions of images per day back in 2008 was not a good idea. So what happened is, stuff would break, and I'd have no idea how to fix it because it was so far beyond what I just didn't have time to learn all that stuff. So I was like, I don't want to be fixing servers, designing them, and then building every little piece of it, so I figured I should start hiring some people.
So who were the first types of employees you brought on and why?
For the first 2 years, it was mostly customer service. So, and then I think a developer in 2010 or late 2010 to build out our ad serving platform so that I could sell ads instead of relying on Google or others to sell them. And customer service simply because, when you start having tens of millions of users, things pile up and you have to answer just a ton of emails. So, and to keep the site clean, like I developed all the scamming algorithms and not just, there's a lot of people that try and break in and do stuff. So having all that reviewed and taken care of really quickly was really important so that people come in and have a really good experience and then they tell their friends. And if there's a bunch of scammers and things that try and break in, it's not good.
Now your business model early on was, as you said, Google Ads, SEO optimization, and that all began to change in 2010, 2011. Let's talk a little bit about the shift to mobile. You said that overnight, essentially, your business model didn't work. How did you deal with that? When did you figure out that you were really going to need to change how you attracted users?
So we saw the increase in mobile, but it wasn't really around until about 2012 that we started taking it seriously, when 10% of our traffic was mobile. We're about 90% mobile now. It's a question of, do we support a website in the next 2 years? Why do we need a website now? Everything's mobile. So when we saw that coming, quickly started putting together mobile teams, and that's when we really start hiring a lot of developers, is to create an Android native app and an iPhone native app. And like I said, now it's 90% mobile for us, and if we hadn't made that switch, we would have died like many other companies in the space did.
But talk to me a little bit about how you attract users to mobile. It's a very different proposition than making sure you rank highest in Google's algorithm.
Actually, it's not so much. Because we have a strong brand, just having something in the store bumps you to the top, because most of how the store works is if you get a ton of downloads, you will rank super high, and then you will rank high for all the terms. So for us, it was because we had such a large brand and user base that they would just switch to downloading the apps and push us to the top of the store. And 4 years ago or 3 years ago, there was a whole bunch of independent, dating apps. They all got pushed out of the store when all the major brands started releasing apps. And it's consolidated now, and there was 5-10 large dating apps, 4 or 5 years ago, they don't exist anymore. They all got pushed out. So it's really, at the end of the day, brand is what's going to win in the store. And now that, and going forward, what's going to be interesting is Google is going to open it up so you can bid, like you can in search. So you can bid for the top spot for like dating, or if somebody's searching for another dating app, you can show up above it. So that is, the rules are going to change again very shortly.
So let's talk a little bit about the metrics that you look at when users come to the site. How do you keep them on your mobile offering? I know that messages sent is a crucial metric. Talk to me a little bit about that.
So we look at active daily users and we look at how many messages they send. So if a user engages and sends a message, there's a chance they're gonna get a reply. So we really care about maximizing messaging, because every user who gets a message has a chance to reply. They'll come back to the site, then have a chance to go on a date. And if they go on a date, they have a chance to enter into a relationship. So at the very bottom of the funnel, we care about how many relationships are generated each day or each month. And at the very top of the funnel, we care about how many messages are sent between users. How many messages are initiated between users per day?
How many messages are initiated per user per day? How many messages overall are being sent on the site?
So it's about 30 million messages a day and 6.5 million first contacts per day.
Not an insignificant number. Again, how do you make money though? It's not through ads anymore. Talk to me a little bit about your offerings.
So we still make a lot of money on the website. There's still a bunch of ads there, but the majority of our revenue is now subscription. So it's an optional upgrade that you can buy to see if someone read your message, to see what date and time someone viewed you. So there's a whole bunch of additional features that you can unlock by upgrade. So it's more of a freemium product than a subscription product.
And how do you experiment with which of those options generates the most revenue for you?
Well, so we have a test running right now where on the upgrade page, you know, we have our three payment options, and currently it says best deal is this one. We went and changed it to most popular, and it looks like that's going to have a 5% increase in revenue, overall revenue, just changing a stupid little word on the upgrade page. So we do a whole bunch of split tests like that, and you know, when you do one split test after another and you have a whole bunch of these wins, they incrementally make a profound impact. Now, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a large business or a small one starting out, there's only about 6 to 10 things a year that you're going to do that are going to make a real difference. And, you know, let's say you have 4 or 5% changes, that's all multiplied together. So you can see a 25-30% gain in revenue if you can find 5 of these things a year.
What if you change it though and it's a 5% decrease? Have there been sort of mistakes you've made along the way that you realize, no one wants that?
Well, we split test it, right? So we split test everything, and you know, 80-90% of tests are going to fail. But the key is that you test and you only keep the winners, and then you keep building off the winners. And what a lot of companies do is, you know, growth is a process, it's not a destination. You have to run split test after split test and you'll keep the winners. If all you do is you run some split test and then you pick a winner, but then some other person randomly goes changes things on the site, you cancel everything out. Because, you know, it's like throwing a coin in the air and calling heads or tails. 50% of chance, 50% of the time you're gonna lose. So if you have everyone in the company making a bunch of changes, 50% of the time you're gonna be negative. And no one knows. So really the key is just to try and do fewer things and split test them all.
Do you look at what your competitors are doing and who do you consider your competitors?
Of course. So what we do is for our competitors, it's ISE. So they have their earnings call, and on their earnings call they talk about, or in their earnings call notes, they talk about like the types of split tests they ran, how much money it made. So, you know, you try and test the same things, or you look to see what your competitors did, and you look to see how the site changed over time. And then you try and develop theories as to why they're using that, you split test off it. Because, you know, dating is probably one of the most competitive markets there is. So if someone figures something out, it's gonna spread to all the other sites relatively quickly. So you just keep a lookout as to what is working. You constantly try and test against, you know, things you think are working really well for others.
You talked about the importance of brand. You've taken out your first television advertisement last month. Talk to me a little bit about why you did that after all these years. Why TV now?
Yeah. So we started at TV ads in the US. Basically, TV is just so much cheaper than online advertising. So we use TV because it's increased our signups by 20% in the US in the last month. There's no way we could do that online. So you know, most of the dating sites, they do actually spend online. You notice a lot of businesses are starting to spend online. Now I know the general perception is that TV is just so more expensive than online, but it's simply not true.
Now there are 90 million singles in the US at least, only 5 million of them currently use dating websites. What's your plan to get the next 85 million onto yours?
Well, we added voice calling to the app, so you can do anonymous calling between users. So. What we're really trying to do is in the next 5 years or so, mobile, the market penetration is going to increase in the 30 plus, the 40 plus. And when mobile first came along, we saw this massive influx in the 20-year-olds. And now we're seeing the massive influx in the 30, 40, 50-year-olds. And that cycle is still going to play out in the next 3 or 4 years. And then we have Tinder, which it really expands the category. It's bringing a lot more people to try dating. Tinder's not really dating, it's kind of dating. And there's a lot of those people who are now, as they age, they're going to start using dating sites. And dating sites monetize at significantly higher rates. So, you don't need to capture everyone, you just need to capture a significant portion of the market.
Will you ever accept outside funding?
I don't think so. At this point, we make significant amounts of money, and it's nice to be able to move money between my companies, not have to worry about it, then it would all be locked in one company, and that wouldn't be good.
So we have about a minute left. If there's any questions from the audience, by all means, shout them out. Otherwise, I will let you go and get your well-earned drinks. Marcus, thanks very much.
Thank you.